Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, are you light enough yet? How light can you get? Well, we're going to lighten up a lot because we have a wonderful guest on our show today who lightens up so many people all the time in his role he plays as Swami Beyondananda. And I saw him entertain an audience recently, and it was amazing how constantly laughing I was. You know, it's so joyful just to be in constant laughter. And so he's a very wise man, and he's agreed to be on the show. He's also the author of a book called Spontaneous Evolution that he co-authored with the biologist Bruce Lipton. And so we're going to be speaking with our guest, Steve Behrman. Steve, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. It's good to be here, wherever we are. We're everywhere all the time right now. Anybody can tune in.
Right. The whole world is listening, actually. They might not all.
Good thing I don't get paranoid about stuff like that.
But unconsciously, I think everybody is listening to us. So this is going to be a very powerful show. So don't be paranoid. That's right.
No, you know, actually, I have two afflictions. One, I'm paranoid, and the other is I'm dyslexic. So I believe that the world is plotting to make me happy, and there's nothing I can do about it.
So. Oh, I'm so sorry. No, happy for you. So, you know, you have so many wise jokes and such humor. It's great. But it's also nice to see you be the wise man who writes all this humor and talk with us from that place too. Because I wanted to focus, and you also felt that way, that we should focus on humor and laughter as a tool for evolution. And how important it is for us to see the light that is hidden from so many of us. And we really, so many people feel that they're in darkness because of the confusion, the chaos around us. And it really is difficult to discern how to save ourselves. So if we lighten up, perhaps we have a chance.
It'll feel better no matter what's happening. And I think it gives us perspective. You know, I mean, if you look at the easiest way to manipulate people is through fear. And because fear really narrows our focus of attention, it puts us in fight or flight. And if somebody promises us that they're gonna help us survive, first of all, they focus on a problem, it's a great problem caused by somebody else usually. And if we focus on this, and we narrow our focus of attention and you follow me, then we will survive this. And we see that kind of manipulation, unfortunately, on both sides of the political divide.
Right.
When we allow ourselves to have, to expand our consciousness through love and humor, then all of a sudden we have much more of a global view. You know, levity actually lifts us up. And when we're lifted up and uplifted, we can see from a higher perspective. We are not so pulled into these human polarities that we find ourselves in. And humor is a way to liberate ourselves from this or that by providing novel ways that familiar things can relate to one another.
Well, I've heard you say that laughter is the shortest distance between two people.
Yes, I was quoting Victor Borge. Victor Borge said that many years ago. And I think it's really true that it breaks down barriers. And I mean, maybe you wonder, why do jokes always come in threes? Why is it a minister, priest, and a rabbi? Okay, so minister, priest, and a rabbi are discussing legacy. How do they want to be remembered? What do they want the eulogist to be saying when they're laying in their casket? And the minister says, well, I want them to be saying he was a family man and a pillar of his community. The priest said, I want them to be saying he was a holy man and a leader of his flock. The rabbi says, I want them to be saying, look, I think he's breathing. So what happens is in our world, you know, we are living in a world of dualities. It's light and dark. It's left and right. It's you're with us or against us, chocolate or vanilla, Democrat or Republican. And so in this world of dueling dualities, we tend to get pulled into one of those. Whereas humor offers us a third way. And when we laugh, what happens is it takes us on that amazing journey from the head to the heart. Because in the head, we have, in the mind, we have these beliefs that keep us separate. In the heart, we have unity, coherence, and love. And so there's a ha, 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 and then there's an aha, an insight, and then there's an ah, as we leave the static of the head for the ecstatic of the heart.
Right. So, and you can feel that when you're laughing with others, you feel kind of a unified heart going on in the mutual laughter.
They call it hearty laughter for a reason, and that's the power of it. And so when we find ourselves in a situation where we are laughing together, and usually it really has to do with laughing about the human condition rather than making fun of, ridiculing, or putting somebody else down, because you might laugh at that, but it leaves you with a not so funny feeling at the end. So we want to leave people laughing, and we want to leave them smiling so that they feel like there hasn't been a takeaway, but there's been something given to them that they leave after laughter, that fullness of spirit.
Let's call it collective humor versus tribal humor.
That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. And, you know, and we all grew up with tribal humor. We all grew up with humor that set others apart, that made us feel better at the expense of other people. And so now we're really learning something different. So I'll give you an example. Many years ago, I was doing a program. It was a health conference. And as Steve, I was talking about humor. And I was talking about a condition that we suffer from in our culture called irony deficiency, meaning that the contradictions are so profound and so pervasive that we don't recognize them, and that it's up to a comedian. A comedian's job is to pump ironies, to actually exaggerate these and bring them to consciousness. So I was talking about irony deficiency. Seeing a doctor won't help, but seeing a paradox will. And I talked about the contradiction, people who call themselves pro-life, but who believe in the death penalty. And so after the presentation, a woman came up to me, and she was actually very upset because apparently she was anti-abortion, and I ridiculed her point of view. She was very angry with me, and I told her a story, but she didn't know I was telling her a story. I said, you know, there was a TV show, and there were three religious experts, a minister, a priest, and a rabbi, talking about when life begins. And the moderator asked, when does life begin? The priest said, life begins at conception. Now, again, the woman doesn't know I'm telling a joke. So she says, that's what I believe. And then they asked the minister, when does life begin? He says, life begins when the baby takes the first breath. And she's shaking her head no. And then they went, rabbi, when does life begin? And the rabbi says, life begins when the children leave home and the dog dies. And this woman burst out laughing in spite of herself, and she hugged me. So here we have the trance of separation broken by a joke that created a unified spirit by taking us out of the dueling dualities and pointing to an absurd third way that essentially dissolved the conflict between us, at least for that moment.
Well, yeah, for the moment, because it didn't solve the dilemma of different points of view, but at least that we could, they found a mutual appreciation of each other's.
You know, there was a great teacher that I met years ago, Johann Galtung, and Johann has been an advisor and negotiator for the European Union and for the United Nations and so on. And he came up with something that he calls the fifth way. Now, normally in conflict, I win. One way is I win, you lose. Another way is you win, I lose. Another way is compromise, which is we both lose a little bit. And then there is simply ignoring the situation, pretending it doesn't exist. until finally it blows up. But there's a fifth way. And the fifth way is using the polarities as dynamic duo dance partners, as kind of a dynamo to create energy and to propel us out of these dueling dualities and spiral us up into a new way of seeing things. So one of the examples he gave, there were two Central American countries, and I'm not remembering which they were, that had a border dispute about this piece of land that had devolved into almost open warfare. And so Johann Galtung was called in as a negotiator, and he came up with a fifth way idea. The idea was that that piece of land is now a joint international national park that both parties share in together, that they both manage together, so there's inbred cooperation. There's no fighting over the border, and everybody gets to benefit from it. So the higher use of humor is to propel us into a new way of thinking. And this is where it becomes evolutionary, because it helps something emerge out of the polarities and emerge into something that wouldn't be predicted by the two polarities.
Well, and then I guess it's how do you translate that into different viewpoints that might not ever get resolved?
Well, you know, there's a very interesting teacher, Jim Rough, and he's developed something called Wise Democracy. And he has developed a way for people, he calls them wisdom councils. And he brings people together from diverse points of view and looks at coming at points of agreement. So he had this one group, anti-abortion and pro-choice. And of course, at the beginning, there was just people yelling at each other. But after the shouting died down, there was this kind of silence, this uncomfortable and yet very generative space where we've already aired our differences, now what? And into this space, he asked the question, what can we all agree on? And this very diverse group that disagreed profoundly about abortion came to an agreement that what they all agreed on was every child born should be loved and wanted. Oh, an angel just got his wings. Every child born is to be loved and wanted. From that point of view, then the two of those groups together can temporarily put their differences aside and say, how can we work together so that we create a world where every child is wanted? And in the process, perhaps we actually greatly reduce the numbers of abortions through contraception, through education, through dealing with some of the psychological issues that cause us to sabotage ourselves. Well, so there are deeper and higher and deeper answers than the ones that we usually go to, which don't actually work. And what's going to happen in this country is one side is not going to defeat the other side. If we do survive this current crisis and thrive at the other end of it, we will have found ways where, instead of focusing on the toxic aspects of progressive and conservative, we can ask collectively, how do we want to progress and what do we want to conserve?
I think the young people today feel victimized by this schism in our society and identify with each other as they're all together victims of us older tribal people who are fighting about things. And so they identify more with their mutual purpose, I think, and aren't as attached to the politics of it and look for the humanity in each person.
You know, and of course we are in a situation, I remember years ago when I would talk to people who thought of themselves as being spiritual and I tried to talk politics, they'd go, I don't want to go there. And my response was, well, guess what? There has already come here. And we're dealing with it, whether we deal with it or not. And so the young people who stayed home in 2016 because they didn't want to vote for the lesser evil, ended up getting the greater evil. So, you know, when you choose to not vote for the lesser evil, guess what? You end up with the greater evil, which is what we have. Now, it's also very, very important that we begin to find ways to create new choices and ways for people to collaborate and cooperate. So that's really what we're looking at in this post-Trump world, which we hope to get to very soon.
Right, and coming back to the younger people today, I don't think they're as attached. Of course, there are communities that are, that really can condition young people in negative ways, but I think generally on this planet, the young people today are wiser and will make it a better world.
This time for sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, and actually, what you just did, it's interesting because there was a method that you have of taking something that's negative and turning it into at least a lighter feel is to speak like Bullwinkle.
Yes, exactly. I mean, what, you know, I mean, if you're upset with something happening in the world, you know, Donald Trump is president, he's destroying the world. When you do that, what you're actually doing, first of all, you're having to put your face in a strange contortion to actually do the Bullwinkle voice. And what happens is you create a small degree of separation between the words that you're saying and the distress that you're feeling. And just that little gap gives you the opportunity to see it from a slightly different point of view. One of the things that I did after the 2016 election is I made it my business to educate myself, and I started talking to people who voted for Donald Trump for various reasons, and you know, really began to look at a much deeper view of politics in this country and what the forces have been that have helped create that that level of toxicity. I like to say that Donald Trump is America's balloon karma payment. So one of the things I did, my wife Trudy and I watched the 12-part series that Oliver Stone did, The Untold History of the United States. And that really, I'm a history major, so I know a lot of this stuff, but it really gave me some additional nuances to look at how the elite class has consistently betrayed the people of this country and how we've essentially been living under the rule of the lowest common denominator for thousands and thousands of years. And so this dominate or be dominated meme has been very persistent. And I know that you're familiar with kinesiology, muscle testing. And so if we take the average progressive activist and we did some kinesiology with them and they stuck their arm out like this and we said, had them say, I believe there will be, that we will create peace on earth, doink, their arm would test weak. Because internally, our wiring and our programming and how our DNA has been programmed, it's been programmed to live in a me or you world rather than a me and you world. And so right now, as you said, the young people are much more primed for this new way of being, for this new condition, for this deconditioning the old condition and reconditioning a new condition. And that's why they are much more willing to engage that way. And it's very important that we do, because in the process of engagement, as my friend Joseph McCormick, who's a conservative transpartisan activist and pioneer, had an ongoing group in Seattle where he brought together the entire political spectrum. And after people got done yelling at each other, and after all of that heat died down, they began to converse and they began to educate one another. The progressives educated the conservatives about community and about the environment. The conservatives educated the progressives about the Federal Reserve, about the income tax, and about the toxic bank situation. And so out of this mutual understanding is coming an entirely new wave, a new, I'm calling it deep center. I think Marianne Williamson is the best representative of that right now, because she is speaking things that are not being spoken by either side. And people are hungry for that fundamental truth. Instead of saying we need to have universal health care, she's saying, why is health care so expensive and why are people so sick? What are the forces that are making people sick? And most of the reform aspects that the progressives have initiated intentionally don't deal with fundamental change. They're basically about softening a very toxic, obsolete, and obsoletal system from around the fringes. We'll make it a little better. We'll make it more tolerable. We'll raise the $15 an hour minimum wage. You know, we'll give people health care. But really, why are so many people getting cancer? You know, why is the earth and how is the earth being toxified? During the Obama administration, interestingly enough, there were more Monsanto people put in positions of quote unquote regulation than in any administration prior. So the Democrats are kind of the kinder and gentler face of the same toxic system that exploits, extracts, poisons, and then walks away and leaves the problem for future generations.
So the idea is what is being called an integral society, which we're evolving into, which is working with the best of all worlds together, rather than making any one point of view dominant.
Yeah, exactly. And I like integral because it's emergent. It takes the positive threads of progressivism, the positive threads of conservatism, and takes those and weaves them together into something that is more fundamentally balanced. I'm thinking of back in the 70s when there were a lot of quote unquote free schools that were forming. There's one school, my friend Phil Moore in Michigan created Upland Hills School. And this school stands out because it was integral, that the freedom was in the right place, the structure was in the right place, and the design was for every child to be known and for the talents and skills and gifts and works of heart to emerge from each child and be offered in the context of a loving community.
Right.
And that took traditional values and progressive values and found the functional aspects of each of those and wove them together. School is still going strong after 45 years.
So we're moving from, as you call it, full realization into full realization.
Yeah, when first we got to realize our foolishness, which we haven't yet.
Right.
That's why the comedian's role is so important. In times when nobody really knows the truth. Years ago, in the early 1980s, I taught a writing class at University of Michigan. And one of my students was Boris. And Boris was an emigre from Brezhnev's Russia at that time. And he was taking my writing class. He was writing a Russian play. It was totally dreadful. I tried to discourage him. But he smuggled something very important out of the Soviet Union, jokes. Because in a very repressive regime, as we're seeing right now, humor is the currency of sanity. When we tune into Bill Maher or tune into Trevor Noah or Colbert, we are getting a dose of sanity. We're remembering what sanity is. We're getting to recognize that in a world where a would-be dictator is trying to turn everything on its head and tell us that white is black is white, left is right, up is down. So Boris smuggled all of these jokes out of the Soviet Union because they were the currency of sanity. I said, Boris, these are great. I'll help you clean up the English here. We'll publish them in the Ann Arbor News. And Boris said, no, Playboy. I went, oh, okay. So he sent him off to Playboy. And I got a call within days. We want to publish. They ended up publishing 20 of these jokes.
Wow.
And I'll tell you one, and this gives you an idea of how people kept
saying. All right, we're nearing the end of the show, so.
I'll be real quick. Okay. Yeah. Two comrades are standing in line, waiting for meat or something, and after about an hour and a half, one of them freaks out. He says, "I can't stand this. I'm going to go shoot Brezhnev." He goes to shoot the premier. Hour and a half later, he comes back. His friend said, "Did you shoot Brezhnev?" And he goes, "No, that line was longer." So that's how people stay sane in an insane, new word, situation.
Right. So this has been wonderful talking with you. And you have a website, Wake Up Laughing.
Yes, Wake Up Laughing. You can find out where the Swami is. You can order some of my books, ebooks, comedy audio pieces, MP3s, and so on. And, you know, get a sense of how humor heals.
Well, yeah, it's so wonderful. And but to me, the best comedians are usually among the wisest of all people. And so it's such a pleasure to talk with you about where, you know, the person your humor comes from and why. And I'm so glad to have this opportunity. So I really want to thank you for being on Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. And thank you for your wisdom and your amplifying these messages.
Well, thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.